Arsenal's Premier League title juggernaut faced a bumpier ride than hoped after a damaging collision with Aston Villa, and you guessed it, Unai was at the wheel. Can Mikel Arteta's side recover from that setback in time to face Bayern Munich on Wednesday night? For the answer to that question and many more beside, stay tuned to the Arsenal Beat. Hello everyone and welcome back to the Arsenal Beat. I'm Mark Manbryans from PA and alongside me today I have Simon Collings of the Evening Standard and Football London's Kaya Kainak. Fellas, thank you for joining me on a rare recent edition of the Arsenal Beat review show in which we have to actually talk about a defeat, a massive defeat. And I'm not talking about Sunday, I'm talking about in my absence last week when Kylie Minogue was absolutely decimated because when you failed to mention All the Lovers, which is clearly her seminal work. Anyway, we won't get tied down as much as I'd like to with Kylie. But regardless of that, we now have to dissect a disappointing day in North London. And look ahead, of course, to that trip to Bavaria. And we'll top it all off with the latest instalment of Guess the Gooner 2. Guys, let's tackle the 90 minutes first and come on to the potential ramifications later, I guess. Simon, straight off the bat, I'll ask you straight out. What went wrong?
Well, I think the first half Arsenal, I did think they played well, but it was a case of not really taking their chances, which has been a problem they've eradicated in the past. You know, early this season they were struggling, but since coming back from Dubai they've been free scoring. But when Trossard missed that big chance, you know, Jesus had a header into the side netting. I think they kind of gave Villa the opportunity to get off the hook. And in the second half, I think you've got to give credit to Aston Villa. I don't think many teams have come to the Emirates and been that bold playing out from the back. And yeah, they just looked quite leggy, I thought, in those sort of closing stages, Arsenal. I thought Watkins particularly sort of kept causing them problems and Arsenal were just sort of paid the price for not taking their chances in the first half. But credit to Villa, I think, you know, the way they played and the way Emery addressed it at half-time to stop Arsenal playing through the middle of them worked really well.
Kaya, I think it has to be appreciated, isn't it, that they lost to a very good Villa outfit, well-drilled, as you'd expect from most Emery teams. I mean, me and you walking back to Highbury Islands last night on that conversation, weren't we? But what do you put it down to that first half? Is it legginess? Is there a bit of tiredness in the legs? Is it, if we're led to be believed, they didn't know the Liverpool result, so there's no pressure from that. So can you pinpoint what you think led to that performance?
I don't think the first half performance was particularly bad, so I'm sort of loath to criticise it. As Simon was saying there, like they created lots of chances and they probably should have been 2 or 3 nil up by half time. And I think if they had been 2 or 3 nil up, I don't think any of us would have come into the press room at half time and said, "Wow, Arsenal are getting lucky here." I think we all would have said, "This is what they deserve." And Arsenal were really impressive. They played that kind of football that we've seen them play, the kind of football they played at Brighton for long periods, the kind of football they played more or less from the winter break onwards, apart from maybe the Porto games. And it just sort of, it seemed at half time that it maybe dawned on them a bit that they needed to get a result. And that's probably the first time in a really long time where that's been the case. I think Arsenal have obviously been chasing and they've kind of had the liberty of being sort of, the pressure's kind of been off in a way. It's almost felt like it's been a bit of a free hit title charge for Arsenal, because I think by January, so many people thought they were so far out of it and they've been able to claw their way back into it. Whereas now they're suddenly actually in it and it almost looked like the players became aware of it. And as Si was saying again, like they looked really fatigued towards the end. So, so tired. And obviously a part of that is Aston Villa getting the ball more and then you have to chase the game a lot more. But even then, like if you look at the first goal, the way Havertz goes out to close down the cross, like that's a tired challenge. And I thought Zinchenko looked really leggy. I thought Rice even looked quite leggy. And there's no real excuse for that because they had two more days rest than Aston Villa and they've got less injuries. They've got, you know, didn't have any players really missing apart from Timber. So I don't really know. It's a really weird one to put your finger on because Simon at full time, we were sat next to each other, leaned over to me and said, "Is that just a classic game of two halves?" And we were like, "Yeah, probably." Because it was so weird in the sense that something that was going so well for 45 minutes then went so badly for the next 45.
So we've talked a few times on the pod and in person and everything about this myth that playing in the Champions League on a Wednesday and Premier League at the weekend, it can tire you out. But maybe this is the first example of that, because that Bayern game, you are going to exert much more energy in a game like that than you are in a group stage game against a PSV or the equivalent, aren't you? When you're also chasing that game. Do you think that could have bled over into Sunday, or is that me trying to pick at some straws for Arsenal fans.
No, I definitely think there's something in that, and I think there's an emotional tiredness from Champions League game, particularly like that Bayern one, which was, you know, played at full throttle right until the end. You know, there was contention with the penalty shout, and Arsenal, you know, playing in these high stakes games is going to take it out of you. And this is the first time they've done this for what, 5, 6, 7 years. Certainly the first time they've obviously done it under Arteta, and it takes teams time to get used to that. I mean, even look at, you know, City and Guardiola when they first got together, it took them time to get used to it. You know, you think of Pochettino and Spurs, it took them time to get used to it. So I think there is definitely an element of that. And probably when you look at the games, you know, you could have had in between a Champions League tie, you know, obviously it's the way the fixtures fall, but, you know, Manchester City having Luton at home is pretty much the perfect game you want, as we saw when Arsenal rotated against it. And having a team like Villa, I think it's just a difficult, difficult game to have in between. So, you know, I think for Arsenal this season, it is a new experience of trying to juggle the two of them. And I think the squad, you know, the bench has looked better in recent weeks, but it's probably still not at that level of someone like a Manchester City where, you know, there's a full trust from Arteta in terms of making changes and bringing players in and having players off the bench that means they can rotate fully and cope with this sort of schedule. But certainly for Arsenal, I think, yeah, it felt like they were sort of tired from what they put in against Bayern. It'll be interesting to see what they're like in the Allianz.
Well, it's the new thing this season, isn't it? We've seen this Arsenal side battle for a title. We've seen them run Man City really close. But this year, you've got to add into that mix the fact, especially as we mentioned before, at this stage of the season in the Champions League, you're only going to be playing the best teams in Europe. So that is an added pressure. They've got it again to come this week. And obviously, we'll come on to that later on the pod. Kai, you mentioned a player that I think might come up on this pod between now and the end of the season quite often, and that's Zinchenko. What did you make of his performance yesterday? He seemed, and I think for a while now there's been a concern. His defensive work has never been amazing. We all know that. And I think it was always kind of, it's okay because he covers it up with the other ways that he, you know, he contributes to the team. But could that now be a bit of an undoing for Arsenal, having had that such a strong back four with those essentially four centre-backs playing across the back four in a la Man City? Could he potentially cause Arsenal more trouble than it's worth having in the side?
Yeah, all the lovers of Zinchenko seem to have disappeared all of a sudden. It's a strange one because I don't think you can necessarily criticise Mikel Arteta for choosing Zinchenko yesterday, because he was a key part of their dominance in the first period. The way he drifted into midfield and Villa couldn't really cope because Tielemans and McGinn were getting totally overrun, and they were trying to leave Watkins up with Morgan Rogers and trying to sort of have a bit of a threat on the counter-attack, but Watkins and Rogers were having to drop back to deal with Zinchenko, and it was a real issue. And I thought he was really, really, I thought he was good first half. We do half-time ratings in our live blog on Football London. I gave him a 7, and maybe that was a bit over the top, but I was almost preparing in my head a piece on how sort of Uncle Zinny's come in to sort of save the day, because he's such a leading presence within that Arsenal group. But I feel harsh having a go at him, because I kind of felt that Mikel Arteta left him exposed, because it was clear after the hour mark, arguably before in the second half, that he was shattered. Like, he didn't have anything more left in the tank. He'd run out of puff, and he stayed on until the very end. I think the last change was Nketiah on for Zinchenko. And yes, Arteta, I'm sure, is thinking about Wednesday against Bayern, and maybe that's why Tomiyasu came on for White instead. But I thought starting Zinchenko was the right choice. I thought he was really good in the second half against Bayern. A lot of the reason Arsenal were able to regain their control against Bayern in the way that they were losing it was because he was so impressive, and he defended really well for the most part against Sané. He was good on the ball. And I didn't think he was necessarily terrible yesterday. There were a few moments where the sort of the classic Zinchenko thing where you make a couple of lapses in concentration, and that's always going to cost him. But he just doesn't seem to have the fitness to last 90 minutes, which is a real issue. And there's no real excuse for that, I guess, at this level. And I know he's dealing with injuries and stuff, but I don't know if you can really account for that. But maybe when Arteta picks him, he has to be thinking, look, this guy can only share a game. He can't do a full 90 minutes. We can't rely on him for 90 minutes. And maybe that was the plan all along. Maybe the plan was to sort of get the game won by half-time and take Zinny off and have him ready for Bayern on Wednesday. But I still think he'll start against Bayern Munich. I think maybe we'll get onto that a bit later properly. But I just think that some of the criticism has got a bit over the top. I've seen people call him a Manchester City agent, and maybe those people forget quite quickly how transformative he's been and what a useful player he can be. There are certain games where you don't really want him playing, and maybe an away game at the Allianz is a difficult one. But yeah, I've been critical enough of Zinchenko for most of the season, but suddenly, having seen how he came on and was massive against Bayern, I just think those kind of characters are really hard to come by. And it's not like Kibior was great against Bayern Munich and would have been a massive solution. And I don't think the reason Arsenal lost the game yesterday was because their left back was a bit sort of sleepy. Actually, the goal came from the right hand. The first goal comes from the right hand side, and for the second goal, Zinchenko's off the pitch. So he's not the reason they lost the game yesterday. I think maybe some of the focusing on him has been a bit too harsh. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm in a minority there, but I just think that he's still got a lot to offer Arsenal this season.
You touched on it there. You said about, you know, the odd lapse in concentration. And are we at a point now, and this is me, I suppose, just talking to myself, which is great on a podcast, but are we at a point now where a minor lapse in concentration can ultimately cost you? Like, I suppose I'd weigh it up with the Liverpool game yesterday and they're missing chance upon chance. One of those chances goes in and it's a completely different picture. And I know Zinchenko did error, didn't lead to the goal. But when he gets robbed of the ball by Tielemans and he hits the bar and the post, it kind of almost sends a message then, doesn't it? Like, if we can get at these, we can beat them. And I don't know if that's oversimplifying it, because obviously Zinchenko is a fantastic footballer, but he might start suddenly being targeted, arguably more than he was before, because of that defensive frailties or perceived defensive frailties. And on that idea of frailties at the back, Simon, what do you think of Gabriel the last couple of weeks? He seemed struggled a bit against Bayern, and yesterday we saw him, you know, hoofing the ball into Zinchenko and committing a foul right on the edge of his own box. Do you think that's, I don't know what the phrase would be, but almost like some of that panache of that defensive line that didn't think it was ever going to get breached, it seems to have dropped the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he's dropped off maybe a little bit. I mean, he's been, you know, one of the best players this season and had a great game at the Etihad when Arsenal got a point there. Again, I don't know if it's an element of, you know, he's played an awful lot of minutes, or whether this again is just the sort of pressure of this point in the season and the impact it's having on the whole defence, and he's just been a victim of it. But yeah, I mean, particularly, I thought against Bayern, he looked quite shaky. And again, yesterday, just sort of some uncharacteristic errors, you know, the pass into Zinchenko's back. And I think that can sometimes sort of spread across the defence, who, yeah, just haven't really looked as solid this week for the first time in a long, long time. And it will be, I know we'll probably get onto it, but it will be interesting to see what Arteta does in Bayern with the defence, because I think we sort of said it yesterday, didn't a few of us, when we were chatting after the game, like, the defence did look really good for a run when they just played Kiwior and they sort of changed the system. And I know Kiwior had a really difficult game in the first leg, but might there be a part of Arteta who's like, oh, maybe we should just go back to that when the defence was great and we were keeping loads of clean sheets and stuff. So it is really, really difficult. But yeah, that whole sort of left side of defence in particular, I think, is where there's been the issues. The Gabriel and Zinchenko, I think they're the two who've looked a bit sort of shaky. But maybe this is just the evolution of where Arsenal are going. You know, if you're at a level where you're winning the league ahead of Manchester City, should you not be in a place where people like Zinchenko and Jesus, who were squad players at Man City, are now squad players for you? That maybe that's where Arsenal should be. They shouldn't be starting every week. And I think with Zinchenko, I think there is a place for him in the squad. I think having a player like that as an option is definitely what you need. But his style of play, the sort of risk-taking, quite sort of swashbuckling, feels like a sort of throwback to the team of last season and not really the team of this season, which is built around control, suffocating opponents, giving nothing away. He kind of feels like a relic of last season. So I don't know if it's just maybe the team sort of evolving beyond him, and his role might not be as pivotal as it used to be.
Just on that, the reason Mikel Arteta has swapped David Raya for Aaron Ramsdale is to get rid of that hectic sort of insecure nature that defined Arsenal's run in last season. And Zinchenko is, like Simon said, symptomatic of it. And having just defended him, he's emotionally volatile in a way that I don't think you can afford to be at this time of the season. I still remember last year when he was sort of the Southampton, it was 2-0 down, and it wasn't really the end of the world because Southampton were at the bottom of the league and there was still, I think, 70-odd minutes to go, but tried to pull everyone in for a sort of a mid-match huddle. And it's sort of those kind of things that you just sort of think, I don't know if that's the right thing to be doing. And he does have that in him, but It's the classic Zinchenko debate. It will never be sort of finalised. It's something we'll talk about for the rest of his time at Arsenal, but it's sort of the risk and reward, isn't it? Of sort of everything he offers you on the ball, are you willing to accept a few things? And I remember Arteta was asked about it, and sort of he was saying, I think it was the Wolves game earlier this season where he did make an error that led to quite a nervy finish. And Arteta sort of said, yeah, he makes mistakes, but he gives us so much as well. And I wonder if a fully fit Alex Zinchenko might be doing a lot better. I think he still is dealing with an injury, and I think he shouldn't have been left on for as long as he was yesterday. But it's interesting that sort of the relics of last season, in the sense of, the run Arsenal have had throughout 2024, so many of the players who have been involved weren't in the running last season. So Kivior wasn't really involved. Saliba wasn't really involved. Jorginho was sort of, but wasn't really. Rice wasn't there. Havertz wasn't there. So many of the key sort of players in recent weeks weren't involved last season. And a lot of them a lot of the ones who were involved last season have sort of started to come back in the fold in recent weeks, just because of coincidence of timing and fitness and what have you. But it does seem to be spreading a little bit more of a chaotic energy to this Arsenal team that looks so serene for so long. And yeah, I wonder if like Simon was saying, that they'll look to go back to what worked.
I think it's worth pointing out, just before we wrap up this bit as well, that these players almost have earned the right to be judged the way we're judging them here, because they've set the bar that high, especially in the past few months, that even that slightest drop off, you know, they're going to get criticised. That's the elite level of football, isn't it? You expected that level of performance. So yesterday, you know, I mentioned Gabriel, and Simon, you came back and said how good he was at City. Of course he was outstanding. But now there's that little, there might be about one drop in a game, and you go, oh, you weren't as good as you were last week. And, you know, they've almost earned that right, in a way, to be judged so harshly. But it is one of those things, isn't it, that, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Kai, that the players that were involved last year, are they still scarred by what happened last year? So what, when they struggle with Bayern, when they're losing at home to Villa, do they think back? We don't know what they're feeling on the pitch. Do they think back to last season, what happened, you know? They've got Bayern and Wolves this week. That's two difficult games. If they don't win either of those, what's the response like? They couldn't trigger that response last season. And it's almost, do you need those new players that haven't been scarred by that, if you like, to come to the fore again, and like they have done so far? But bigger picture, the result obviously leaves Arsenal 2 points behind City. But Arteta's side have two league games before City are next in the competition. How healthy is Arsenal's title challenge now, Kaya, after that?
It's been in better shape. I think when Liverpool's game finished just before, we were all talking in the press room, we were watching it, and we were all thinking, wow, this is a massive game for Arsenal. They could really sort of edge in front in the title race. And City have obviously got their nose in front now, and that's always pretty ominous, because they are a team who are capable of winning every single game between now and the end of the season quite comfortably. And if you look at City's fixtures, Spurs away aside, which will be the penultimate game of the season, I think there's not really a single one where you think, wow, that's difficult. There's a lot of fixtures on paper that they should win, whereas Arsenal still have to go to Spurs away. They still have to go to United away, Wolves away, Everton potentially fighting for their lives on the last day of the season. I don't really think, maybe Bournemouth at home aside, even you saw Bournemouth giving Man United a good run for their money. Like, none of those are easy games on paper. So it's going to be a really, really difficult run-in for Arsenal now. And to be honest, I don't think they've necessarily really got anyone but themselves to blame, because they got themselves in such a good position. And whereas before they'd always been the ones chasing, now they're being sort of, this was kind of the first weekend where they were the ones being chased because they were outright leaders, whereas before they hadn't really been for quite a long time throughout the run. And I just think they maybe panicked a bit. And they looked to me like a team that had become painfully aware of, oh my God, we might actually win something. And that kind of led them to freeze a bit in the second half. And I don't think it's in the best places, their title challenge. I do think right now, I don't want to say it's over, because it's not, but I'd be very surprised if Man City don't go on and win the Premier League now. And it's a real shame. And it shows the standards that's changed so quickly off the course of one slip up in the entirety of 2024, really. But yeah, it does look Man City's to lose.
Arteta said something interesting yesterday, didn't he, to the TV, where he said in any other league, the run we'd have been on, we'd be 6, 7, 8 points clear at the top. And you maybe look at Leverkusen and a few teams like that. But you get the point, don't you? That, like you said, you have to be on it every week. And just on that, Simon, I know we'll talk about Wolves later in the week, so I just wanted to ask this quickly. City don't play next weekend. Arsenal go to Wolves Saturday evening. if they lose at Wolves, is that it?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, anything can happen, but I kind of think for Arsenal now, they should just be looking at these six and thinking, we've basically got to be perfect, really, and go six from six and then do what you know, do what you can. I think the way City are playing, we know what they're like when they get out in front. I think this City team definitely is more fallible than teams gone by. But I think for Arsenal now, I mean, Kai touched it briefly there, where they, for a lot of this season, they've been the chasers. And when they briefly went top, they've had this little stumble. I wonder whether now, if they're trying to put some sort of positive spin on it, Arteta can be like, look, this isn't in our hands anymore. You know, we've got everything to win here and nothing to lose. You know, look, if we go for it, win six from six, we fall just short, fair enough. But they've now got everything to gain, nothing to lose. So whether that makes it a bit easier in the equation to think that, right, just absolutely go for it and we'll try and get six from six, and that might be enough, City might stumble. But I think, yeah, look at these games now, particularly, there is the benefit of playing twice before City do. But, you know, we spoke about it, Mark, didn't we, yesterday at the ground. We were like, yeah, if you look at it positively, you can go, oh, we can be 4 points clear of City before their next play. But in the same side, you could be like, well, if you don't capitalise on those games, City suddenly play their matches with, like, safe in the knowledge of going, well, you know, we've got games in hand and the gap hasn't even closed or it's not that big. So, yeah, it's a massive 7-10 days for Arsenal. And this was the exact sort of time last season where this, you know, the whole campaign petered out. And I think for this squad, as much as it's great to win the league, I just think it's crucial that it just doesn't end in a whimper again, that, you know, they take it as far as they can. It doesn't just sort of fall away at the wayside like it did last time. And this is when we'll see if there were scars from last season, if they learned from last season, because the team of old would have probably sort of petered out now and, you know, the campaign would have ended in a whimper, whereas this side have given enough signs that it won't be like that. But we'll find out over these next 10 days if that really is the case.
Also, because then it becomes a thing, right? So let's say Arsenal are in this title race this time next season and they do fall away dramatically at the end. It's almost like the whole choking thing, in the way that Spursy has stuck with Spurs for so many years, like, that's really hard to shake off. A one-off season, you can discount it. You can say it was our first time around the block. We had lots of areas of depth and we had bad injuries and all that stuff, but there's no real excuses this time around. Like, I can't think of an area in the squad, maybe centre forwards aside, but even then they've been scoring loads of goals, where they're really lacking in depth. They've not really got any injuries. You know, they've got a difficult fixture list, but that's the reality of the situation. Like, there's no real excuses. And yeah, if Arsenal do fall away, it's going to become a tag that will be very, very difficult for them to shake.
I completely agree. But maybe, just maybe, the glory this season comes instead in Europe. It's a massive ask, though, to beat Bayern in their backyard after that thrilling 2-2 draw at home last week. Speaking after the Villa game, however, Declan Rice said he believes this is the exact sort of game Arsenal needs to not only bounce back, but to show that they belong at this level.
Yeah, it's the perfect game for a reaction. You know, we need a reaction on Wednesday night, and you know, it's a great chance to show our character and leadership. So, have to go out there and hopefully get into the semi-final of the Champions League.
Simon, firstly, do you agree with Rice's summation there? This is a good game to have after Villa.
Yeah, I mean, when he heard it, I was sort of thinking like, oh, maybe you just want Luton at home and just a game that you know you're going to win and you'll get back. But yeah, in terms of motivating the squad, I mean, we know, you know, Arteta loves his sort of motivational tools and tactics, but he literally needs to do absolutely nothing for this game, because what more is there than the chance of playing the Champions League semi-final? And the game is sort of perfectly balanced, where it's like a winner takes all, isn't it? You know, Arsenal aren't going there to hold on to a lead. You know, Bayern aren't ahead. It's perfectly set up for them. And yeah, you know, we touched on it there, didn't we? Talking about the season ending in a whimper previously, you know, petering out. This, as Rice says, really is the perfect opportunity, because everyone will be, from the outside, will be looking at this Arsenal squad and going, oh, you know, this is what happens here. They get to this point, they fade away, they're going to go to Bayern, they'll get rolled over by Kane and that lot. And Arsenal can shut a lot of people up with a result there. And they've gone to big grounds this season, and they've gone to the Etihad, kept Manchester City out. They went to Anfield, you know, only conceded once. They've done it. And this is really, really a critical time, I just think, for this whole squad, for its group, for its confidence. because it will impact the title race. Whatever happens on Wednesday night, you know, I know they're separate competitions, but if they go there and get rolled over and get knocked out of the Champions League, to suddenly pick yourselves up and go to Wolves 3 days later and get a result is going to be immensely difficult. Whereas if you win it, suddenly the reflection of the whole season changes, and you know it can be a massive shot in the arm. So yes, it's the biggest game of the season so far, I think, and a proper test of how much this team has grown this year.
I think again, Simon, you've nailed it in the sense that this game now is more than 90 minutes in the Champions League semi final almost, isn't it? Does it give us the motivation, the belief, and show other teams and other fans of that actually, you know what, we're here, we're in the title race, we can win the Champions League, we are now a top tier side. Kaya, what are the difficulties you see? You were obviously at the first leg last week. What in that Bayern team, bar the obvious, I suppose, Harry Kane, would you be worried about if you on Wednesday night?
I'd say the wingers up against the Arsenal fullbacks. Ben White was really good, I thought, in the game, but. If it is Zinchenko who starts, Zinchenko up against Sane will be difficult. I know I said he did well in the first leg and I thought he did do well, but that's the difficulty. That Bayern, for the first time in a long time, Bayern were able to properly run at Arsenal and have them running back towards their own goal. I don't remember before that. I don't remember the last time that had happened to Arsenal. They'd never been sort of panickedly is not a word, but sprinting back towards their own goal in a state of panic. So... that's the big concern. I also think the Bayern sort of their mentality is going to be difficult. They've got this history in the competition. They've got this sort of default setting of being winners, and I know that's been challenged in the league this season. But it's not something that they've necessarily struggled with in seasons gone by, and it's something that they may fall back on. And I know you mentioned Kane there, but he's not. Won anything, but he's got that mentality of being a winner, and Manuel Neuer is a winner, Thomas Müller is a winner. Like, there's so many players in that squad, Kimmich, plenty of them who have won everything there is to win. And when you look at the inexperience Arsenal showed in recent weeks, that psychological battle will be fascinating, because even if Arsenal do get on top, and let's say Arsenal start really strong and they go a goal in front, we've already seen that Bayern know how to hang on in a game and they know how to keep it going. So it's going to be very, very difficult.
We'll have general team news chat in just a second, suggestions what we think Mikel might do. We've spoken enough about Zinchenko and the left back that actually what I want to do here is I'm going to count down from three, and when I get to zero, all three of us are going to say who we think should start a left back. We're not even going to discuss it after that. We're just going to have that, leave it hanging in the air, and then talk about why Havertz should start up front and not Gabriel Jesus. So after three, guys, I want one, just the surname of the player you think should start left back on Wednesday night. So three, two, one.
Tommy Azpilicueta.
Oh, look at that. A hat trick for Tommy. I mean, fitness is the only reason I don't think he would, maybe. But centre forward, Simon, do you stick with Gabby Jesus? Do you put Kai Havertz up there?
Yeah, it was an interesting change from Arteta, that particularly given a sort of week ago, he, after the Brighton game, had spoken pretty glowingly about Havertz needs to. Was almost picked his position for himself, and he'd started nine games as well as a centre forward, and he had been great there. I can see why he did it, because the way Arsenal finished that game against Bayern with Jesus as a nine and Havertz in midfield did look good. And I actually thought Havertz played quite well yesterday. I thought he got forward into the box, made some good runs. For me, I would start Havertz as a number nine, but almost for the reason that watching the game yesterday, when Jesus and Trossard start, I look at that Arsenal bench and think, you haven't got your finishers, your impactors, as Arteta calls them, your game changers. And so I think I would start Havertz and I would start Martinelli, and I would have Trossard and Jesus on the bench, because a bit like the first leg, I just think when they're not on there, I look at that bench and think, you know, there's players here that Mikel doesn't really trust to come on and change this. You know, Eddie Nketiah, not started a game since New Year's Eve. Reece Nelson, you know, is routinely the sort of substitute. When he hasn't got Jesus and Trossard there, I don't think there's the trust of them to change it. So I would start Havertz as a nine. I would have Jesus and Trossard on the bench, particularly because, you know, it could easily be a 120-minute game. But for that reason, my main reason would be that's why I'd want to start Havertz, because I'd want those two on the bench.
And Kaya, my one for you is Jorginho. Discuss.
Very difficult discussion. I thought he was quite poor in the first leg, and I thought he was poor when he came on yesterday as well. I thought it was a complete uncharacteristic lack of composure to try and play a through ball that was never on, that exposed Arsenal and essentially handed Aston Villa the game. If he's going to have those lapses in concentration in Munich, then that's not really what you have him in the team for. Having said that, he has shown in the past that he can deal with those difficult, cauldronous atmospheres. I still remember his performance at St James's Park last season, and if he can produce another one of those, then yeah. And I think if you're going to play, we all want Tomiyasu to start at left back, right? And if you're going to do that, then you need someone good on the ball who's deeper in the build-up that Zinchenko sort of offers. And that has to be, for me, Jorginho. I also think you need to protect against the buy and counter, and having Rice slightly further forward just about makes sense, even though Arsenal did look way better when it was Rice and Havertz and Odegaard in midfield. So, yeah, very tricky one.
Just on the Jorginho debate, I mean, we've seen them, Arteta, flip it before for the Liverpool game, where sort of Rice played deeper and Jorginho further forward. I mean, Mark, what would you do in terms of if you were going to play Jorginho, which I think a lot of Arsenal fans want Arteta to do in a big European game, where would you have Rice? Would you have him at the sort of number six where he was yesterday, or would you have him sort of further forward? I mean, he's basically played as a number eight, bar those sort of two England games during the international break. He's been playing as that sort of number eight. But do you sort of agree with the argument, maybe in a big game like this, you kind of want him in your number six, your Rodri position?
Yeah, and I think the fact he did it at City, of all places, this is probably the most... the game at City is probably the one you could liken most to what Wednesday night could be like, in terms of, you know, the drama of it, the closeness of it, the, you know, the competition level of it all. And I just think, and Kai's mentioned several times, just that pace and speed at which Bayern attack, if you have Jorginho at the base of that midfield, is he not just going to get completely exposed? Whereas if you have Rice there covering the ground like we know he can do, but you still then have Jorginho in the side to play the sort of passes, unlike he did against Villa, but to play those passes and to unlock the defence. It seems almost counterintuitive to say, well, play Jorginho higher, but it worked against City. You know, especially defensively, it worked against City, didn't it? It kept City out because Rice can cover so much more grass than a Jorginho. I mean, I suppose, is Thomas Partey now the forgotten man, Kaya? Do we just dismiss the fact he might come into the team?
Could do. I was thinking this as you guys were talking about it. I mean, I wouldn't be majorly shocked, but I think his whole fitness thing, and I just don't think he's up to match speed. To throw him into a game as important as that would be a big risk, and you're putting a lot of pressure on him, and I don't know if he'd be able to handle that. And I've still got flashbacks of him running, spending the whole game at Man City last year, running back towards his own goal, and it didn't end well. So I think it's unfortunate for him, because if he'd got fitter sooner, then he definitely would be in contention for this game. But I just think it's too big a risk to throw him in for, what would that be, his second start since August? So, yeah, too big a risk for me.
Oh, we're talking about defensive midfielders turned left eights. I think it would be remiss of us even to not congratulate Granit Xhaka, someone who the fans have started to appreciate towards the end of his time at Arsenal, whereas I think the journalists who covered Arsenal always appreciated the fact he would stop in the mix zone. He was always a very quotable man. Simon, would he have expected to sign for a club leaving Arsenal and then be lifting a Premier League title? As you said, he got one hell of a deal there, didn't he?
Oh, I mean, yeah, what a move for him, obviously. You know, 5-year contract by Leverkusen, a team who, by the looks of it, play sort of brilliant football, undefeated, league title. I mean, absolute dream for him. And, you know, very pleased for him as well, just from a sort of personal point of view. You know, obviously had an incredibly difficult time at Arsenal, turned it around. Great, you know, the way I think he left that club, if you'd said that back in sort of 2019 when he lost the captaincy, I don't think many people would have believed that, or the sort of acclaim he's held with fans now. You know, if he came back to the Emirates for whatever reason, by Leverkusen were playing Arsenal, I'm sure he'd get a brilliant reception. And yeah, we've sort of spoken a lot about Arsenal this season, the evolution in the midfield. I mean, I think you could have a strong argument that the team would look pretty good if Granit Xhaka still played in it, but he's moved on, and yeah, fair play to him. What a way for him to seal the title with a goal like that, a classic sort of throwback Xhaka strike.
And of course, if Arsenal don't go on to win the Premier League, they could get by Leverkusen in the group stages of the Champions League next year. So there's a distinct possibility we could see Granit Xhaka back at the Emirates. nice segue into Guest Aguna, which I'm afraid, guys, isn't Granit Xhaka, which would have been probably what I should have done, really. But we've had that nice little chat. Yes, I'm going to read out a list of clues and hints that link to a former Arsenal player. It is up to Kaya and Simon to shout out when they think they know who it is. They've got to topple Jordan Davies of The Sun, who finally got to grips with the game and now is refusing to come back on. But he, little does he know that he loses the crown regardless, because there can only be one reigning and defending Guest the Gooner champion. So, Simon and Kaya, it's time to play Guess the Gooner. I played 46 times for Arsenal, scoring once. That one goal came in a victory over Bournemouth that put Arsenal top of the Premier League. I made my Premier League debut as a last-minute substitute for Alexis Sanchez in a win at Crystal Palace.
Kaya.
Yes?
Is it Gabriel Paulista?
Oh, he's got it in three. My days.
Jordan Davis, eat your heart out.
Yeah, it'll be flying to Munich later in tears.
I almost went for it after the second clue as well.
You went nearly went earlier.
Yeah, well, I remember that game against Bournemouth. I feel like it was one of those in between Boxing Day, sort of the Christmas perineum, I like to call it, in between Boxing Day and New Year, where they have those weird games for some reason. I remember that game. I think Ozil scored the other one. Because I have unnecessary space for Arsenal fixtures in my brain, which could be better served for other things. But I guess not. I've got the crown back, so thank God that space is there.
The crown is yours. I'll run through the other clues to those at home. Simon, give us a shout when you think you worked out it was Gabriel Paulista. I was once called up by my national team as an injury replacement for a future Arsenal player, but I never got on the pitch. That future Arsenal player was David Luiz. Since then, I offered to switch my international allegiance after qualifying to play for another country, although, again, I've not been called up. He's now eligible to play for Spain, of course. I am still playing in La Liga. I won the FA Cup in 2015, but was an unused substitute at Wembley. I have also won the Copa del Rey. I joined Arsenal in January 2015. And I now play for Atletico Madrid, having joined them this January, which I did not know, I have to admit.
Yeah, Christ, I did not know he played there. I mean, I didn't know he only played 40-odd games for Arsenal. I thought he might have had more games.
Yeah. But I thought that was low as well. That's what nearly got me.
I was convinced it was Joel Campbell for me.
Yeah, he felt like a bit of a nearly man at Arsenal, I think, Gabriel, didn't he? Because he's clearly good. Like, you look at what he's gone on to do and who he's played for, he's clearly a good centre-half, but he just never really seen. And he always had an error in him as well, didn't he, I think, which was something that, you know, in the current climate, as we've discussed at length here, that is not for the faint of hearted. Guys, talking to not for the faint hearted, Bayern Munich, Wednesday night, we're all off out there. We'll be back afterwards for our review pod / preview pod, because we've obviously got that difficult trip to Wolves as well. But until then, stay safe, everyone.